Blog Talk Radio.
Internet world, welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and so very, very glad that you've joined me today on this very special tribute to the suffering women in the Middle East today. Today is International Women's Day, and of course, this program is a voice for those voiceless women who are facing dictatorship governments all over the Middle East that are oppressed because of their religious views and that are treated like second-class citizens because of the misogynistic culture that they live in. And today is a very, very special day. I want to recognize these women not as victims but as survivors. That's so important. These women are valiant, courageous survivors today, and I want to recognize them, my dear friends in Iran, my friends in Saudi Arabia, and all over the world. Welcome to this broadcast. Today I want to begin with a dedication on my Facebook page, and it's gotten many, many shares, received a lot of likes. It's a very, very troubling, very, very sad photograph of a young 19-year-old Afghan female. Her name is Rakhshana, and she was stoned to death last week in Afghanistan. And what was her crime? Her crime was having a boyfriend. In this particular region of Afghanistan, I've researched this, there are videos dating back 3 years ago or more of similar women about the same age who have been stoned simply because they either looked at another man or had an association with another man. When you see this photograph of this young, innocent 19-year-old girl, your heart has to break. You have to feel absolute anger to the core that she would be treated in such a vicious and barbaric manner. And so today, we honor you, Rakhshana. You stood bravely up against the misogynistic, barbaric culture, unashamedly paid for it with your life. You and many other women in the Middle East, brave, strong, and innocent, and your life cut short so soon, simply because of barbaric, misogynistic, dictatorship, religious views. I have a good friend. Her name is Manoush, and she lives in Sweden. She is an Iranian refugee, and we help each other out. We post things for each other about the latest news going on in the world, especially Iran. And I asked Manoush to please write something specifically for Women's Day today. And she quickly put together a nice little tribute to women. And I want you to hear just exactly what she wrote. Manoush writes, "The Middle East is a strange land. Women and girls in this land have different lives. As some of them are in a situation, when you read or hear about the story of their life, you imagine, well, this has just got to be some kind of a fantasy story. But the life of many of these women and girls is certainly not fantasy, dream, or imagination. It is pure reality. In Iran, girls are forced to marry with elderly men due to the poverty at the age of 9. In fact, they are sold. In fact, they are the victims of poverty and rape. Many of them either commit suicide or are transferred to a psychiatric hospital because of severe depression. In other countries, such as Afghanistan, girls who are victims of rape by father or brother of the family and even have children from them. Dear listeners, these are the realities we see every day in the Middle East, every day. Women and girls are victims of anger, rape, slavery, acid attacks, and even stoning. In some of the Islamic countries, there is a legal rule that if a girl or a woman falls in love with a man and the society and family finds out about their affair, they will execute them by stoning. We have been witnessing this great crime against women for many years in the news and in the websites. The Middle East can be likened to a cursed land for women. For example, in Iran, we have been witnessing acid plaguing incidents on girls and women. One of these victims, her name is Amina, a girl who was attacked by acid because of a boy, and she rejected his marriage request. This girl lives in a difficult situation for the rest of her life. She is blinded, and her brother committed suicide because he didn't want to see her suffer. In this land, girls and women are trying to survive, not to live. The meaning of life is strange to them. Let's pray on International Women's Day for all women who are victims of rape and violence and ask God to open the door for their peace. Let's pray for brave girls such as Rahane Jabari, who fought until her very last breath in prison and then proudly surrender to death. She had a fever on her last day of life, and she said goodbye to life at the top of an execution rope at the tender age of 26. She stood up against the rape and became a symbol for all Iranian women. Throughout history, women have played an important role in changing society, and on this day, we pray that all women will continue to persevere and God would give them power to survive. Women are the symbol of purity and resistance in society, especially in Islamic countries. Women play a very important role in the struggle against oppression. Thank you so much, Manoush, for just a well-called in tribute of the brave Iranian women. Now, I want you to hear this very special article that my dear friend Sholeh Pakravan just wrote yesterday. Sholeh is, of course, the mother of Rahane Jabari, who was executed almost now 4 years ago by the Islamic Republic of Iran. Rahane did one important thing in her life, many things, but she stood up against her rape attack. She was about to be raped, and she defended herself. And in the process, she stabbed her attacker, and he died of his injury. and she was put to death simply because she defended herself against a rapist. This is what happens to women in Iran who are raped. They pay the penalty with their lives. Sholeh has written something very special for Women's Day. Sholeh writes, Iranian women have always been seekers, like a river that is sometimes calm and quiet and sometimes clamorous. They have always been moving towards their goal, which is liberty and equality and rights. Sometimes they stood firm on their stands and were peppered, shot to death. Sometimes for the crime of being pretty, they are burnt in the face with acid. Sometimes, like Zainab Jalalian, they are at the risk of going blind and in prison. And sometimes, like Atna Dayami and Golrik, they have closed their mouth, refusing to eat, insisting on getting their rights. Sometimes, like Rahane, they resisted all of the lies said against them and were hanged on the noose. Sometimes, like Marian Akbari Manafort, they stood up to seek justice for their executed loved ones. Sometimes they were beat in the streets. Sometimes, like the girls on Englehab Avenue, they rose up and ended up going to prison, being dropped from the platform they stood on to show their protest. Sometimes, like thousands of women who play the role of husbands, working patiently to provide their defenseless children with food and keep them warm. Times like Narges Mohammadi and Nazrin Satouti, crying out and clamoring for justice. Sometimes like Gohar Iskaghi, growing up from Sitar's blood. And sometimes like Akran Naqabi, they wear iron shoes, fighting for the love that the regime stole from them. Sometimes they have occupied seats in universities, and sometimes these brave women have entered stadiums with a thousand hardships and difficulties. Don't you see? The women of Iran have never stopped, proceeding towards a light, bright burning with persistence and resistance and strength. This is why the women's community has stood up against the regime. This regime that is willing to capture them, to beat them, to imprison them. I consider today, March 9th, March 8th, not as a woman's day, but as a day to value the resistance and suffering that women bore to gain their rights. Continuing their legitimate battle, the women of Iran are shining stars like a precious stone on a women's movement. These women who are struggling against repression march towards the future fresher, stronger, and braver than before. The unity among the women of Iran will turn into an incredible force and power that will cause this regime to cower in fear. This is why repressions will be severer, and the circle of siege and blockage and pressure will narrow. But no fear. In recent years, women have been strong, brave, and aware. They are not afraid of suffering and torture. I am sure that this repressive system will be scuffed with the last punch by women. Hence, one more time, they will shout at the Islamic Republic of Iran, "You better be afraid. We are all in this together." There is no better person in the world that can express herself with just the most creative selection of words other than Sholeh Pakravan. Thank you, Sholeh, for empowering the women of Iran with your prayers, with your words, with your strength. I want to briefly now turn to Saudi Arabia and remind my listeners that last October, my dear friend Amna was arrested and put in women's prison in Saudi Arabia. For those of you that don't know her story, it's very simple. Amna, a 21-year-old girl, at the age of 19, she was forced by her father to marry her cousin against her will. He threatened her with her life if she didn't do it. Well, she had to do it. But at some point in this marriage, she found a way to escape and ran away from home. And she hid herself along with some other Saudi girls, and I don't know the location of where she hid, but it was a safe location. And we became friends about a year and a half ago, and I began to talk about the issues in Saudi Arabia and began to speak out against the atrocities against women. For a year and a half, we kept in contact, but it was this past summer that Amna had reached a point of such total despair, she couldn't take the hiding anymore. She couldn't get out of the country. They were afraid. Many of the people were afraid to even involve themselves in her life. And so she reached a point where she said, I have to go public about my father, about my situation. I've got to do something. She made a video and posted it on a site called World Citizens for Saudi Women. And it was Amna speaking from her heart about her situation, about the abuse by her father and her family, about the forced marriage, about the issues of the male guardianship in Saudi Arabia. It was just a few hours after this video was posted on social media that her father and the police arrested her. They found her. She was quickly carted off to a prison that is notorious for rape and torture of Saudi women. This is also a place where men, young and old alike, can come and choose women like Amna to be their bride. And that's one way they get out of prison. If that doesn't happen, they could rot in prison forever. Because of the male guardianship law, Saudi women are under the thumb, under the oppressive thumb of men. And it's only up to the father. If he wants her to get out of that prison, he's the only one that can unlock that door. And if he chooses to leave her in there the rest of her life, that is where she'll stay. And so today, I want to be a voice for Saudi women, for my dear friend Amna. And one way I can do that is read this petition to you today from Amnesty International. I want you to hear the tone and the words of outrage against the oppressive yoke on Saudi women. And here's what the author of this petition says. A 25-year-old Saudi Arabian woman in Riyadh is trapped in a household which promotes a rape culture and abuse through various beatings, threats, violence, and many other things, as well as depriving her from basic needs such as food, water, and medical care. I write this on behalf of her, as this is a serious matter that needs immediate attention. I and many private individuals have contacted organizations such as UN Women, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, Refugee, etc., only for them to ignore our cry for help, or they would tell us they do not deal with individual cases. The young lady contacted local authorities and shelters for help, but they would blame her instead for the abuse, or they would turn a blind eye toward her case. This was proven from a variety of emails and proofs of which she provided us with the hopes that it would spark attention. We call upon each and every individual to be a voice in order for her to be placed in a safe environment after her endured trauma. She is also willing to testify on behalf of many other women who are trapped in her predicament in hopes that officials need to start taking lives seriously. I am desperate for this petition to reach as many people as possible because the young lady is looking through other means such as suicide. Who can blame her? It is obvious that she is mentally incapable, and hence I redeem this matter as being serious. I have not provided her full name. I want to protect her identity from any further dangers. It is seen as a shame for a victim of the Saudi state to seek international help from outside their borders. That to me is absurd, considering the fact that the victim and those who are oppressed would need to seek international help in the first place if their own state authorities and organizations didn't turn them away. to the humanitarian organizational entities. We call upon you to act according to the promises that you preach on a daily basis. We cannot, as a society, allow you to weaken the voices of the vulnerable when they call out for you. Furthermore, the whole purpose as to why your entities exist in the first place is to deal with violations that are a threat to human life. If you yourselves do not follow your own mission and vision statements that you are willingly proud to boast about in public view, you are as bad as the individuals who find the need to cause unrest in society. The abuse of Saudi Arabian women has been an ongoing issue that never ends. It is an atrocity that shouldn't even be considered a norm. Covenants and policies do nothing for these women, as they are still being abused and mistreated in the most horrendous ways. A Saudi Arabian woman must not be killed or placed in a detention center just because she knows her worth. The Saudi Arabian state must be held accountable for upholding a culture of abuse in its society. Death should not be, by any means, a way of escape for a woman who is oppressed. Stop turning a blind eye to a human rights violation that is killing many. Stop enslaving Saudi women is the hashtag. I applaud this woman for speaking out against human rights organizations that are failing miserably to do the part that they have created themselves to be. They are negligent. They are not involving themselves in the causes of women who are oppressed. What I wanted to do now before the top of the hour, in celebration of International Women's Day, I want to read to you a special preview in the new book that I'm currently writing. It's called Dance with the Fireflies, The Flight Around the World. And this is the story of Mariah. She is a courageous, outspoken human rights activist, as well as a flight trainer. She trains people to fly. Her hero is Amelia Earhart, who herself was a champion of women's rights. And what I want to say is that this book is not just about a flight around the world, also a book about a mandate. Mariah has a mandate to make the story of her friends to the media. She wants to use her world flight as a platform to speak up for the suffering women in the Middle East. One of her friends is Amna. In the book, I have brought Amna's story into this fictional book and used it as a means to bring awareness to Amna's situation. So what I want to do right now, I want to read to you a selection. Mariah has just been invited to speak at a special pro-life women's rally, which is in response to the liberal women's march for their rights in the city of Oakland, California. This is the women's march that is taking place all over the United States and the world. And Mariah has been invited to speak on behalf of the suffering people in the Middle East. And so she takes this cause very seriously. And I'm going to start reading and listen carefully. This is a special preview from the new book, which, God willing, will be finished toward the end of this month and available on Kindle and in paperback probably the beginning of April. This is from my new book, Dance with the Fireflies, The Flight Around the World, in honor and tribute of Women's Day. This was the perfect opportunity for Mariah to bring nationwide awareness to Amna's plight in Saudi Arabia, and she could not wait to get into the faces of the pro-choice women and give them a piece of her mind. A sea of pro-choice women had filled the plaza, flanked by reporters and cameramen doing on-scene live video interviews. Many protesters had gathered under the shade of the huge oak tree, carrying their signs, yelling and chanting their slogans, "My body, my choice. Keep your rosaries off my ovaries. Time to repeal, time to act, time to take our bodies back." Mariah took a disgusted deep breath and rolled her eyes as she hurried past a group of women standing directly in front of the entrance below to the concrete amphitheater. Hurrying down the circular steps, Mariah pushed her way through the massive crowds and reached the center platform where the conservative pro-life group had set up their media outreach. She was greeted by the head organizer and sat down behind the woman speaker who was just finishing up her presentation. A mix of pro-choice and pro-life women were seated near the platform, waving their signs and interrupting the last few moments of the speech with loud choruses of, "My body, my choice." The woman finally concluded her presentation to a mixture of applause and angry boos and sign waving from the audience sitting in the round facing the center stage. "Please, please, let us show some tolerance and respect for our next speaker," the head organizer pleaded with the audience, and then stepped away from the podium, motioning for Mariah to step up to the microphone. Today, Mariah was dressed rather curiously. She was wearing a short-sleeved pink blouse, brown slacks, and her head was covered with a silk cream-colored scarf representing a Middle Eastern hijab. The audience began chanting again with reporters and cameramen flocking to their side, making sure they were receiving live coverage. Mariah reached down below the podium and picked up a large wooden stick. She then unwrapped the silk scarf from off of her head and planted it on the tip of the stick, waving it in the air. Some of the protesters became quieter, pointing toward the stick and mocking it. Finally, the screams and chants began to diminish as Mariah cleared her throat and stared into the sea of protesters. A week ago in Tehran, a young 31-year-old mother defied the mandatory hijab law by removing her veil and putting it on a stick like the one that I'm holding. She did it right in front of the morality police and a large crowd like this one, daring them to arrest her, which they promptly did. The crowd became quieter as they began focusing on what Mariah was saying. She was taken away to Evin prison, where she was interrogated, tortured, and lashed for disobeying the mandatory hijab law. Mariah reached down behind the podium and lifted up a large poster. There were gasps in the audience as they connected with the picture of women hanging from boom cranes. This is what happens to both men and women who dare to speak out or disagree with the Islamic Republic of Iran. They are hanged publicly from boom cranes, where they slowly die within a few minutes after their windpipes are violently crushed. Yes, women are hanged in Iran. Mariah once again reached down behind the podium and displayed another picture of a young woman standing in court wearing a hijab. This is Rahane Jabari. Just last year, Rahane was hanged in Tehran for defending herself against a government rapist. She stabbed him in the back in self-defense, but because she killed a former government intelligence agent, the government decided his reputation was more important than Rahane being a victim. Mariah had succeeded in hushing the protesters for a precious few minutes. The amphitheater had suddenly become very quiet. However, Mariah was not quite finished. She displayed one last poster of four women whose faces had been horribly disfigured and scarred by acid attacks. "I want you to meet four young women in Pakistan whose lives have been scarred forever." A few women looked away in horror amidst the sound of many audible gasps. Mariah put down the last poster and stared intently into the faces of the women surrounding the center platform. "Today, as I approached the amphitheater, I was greeted with loud yelling and screaming by women proclaiming their right to kill their own babies. It's my right!" A few women stood up shouting. The women sitting next to them pulled them back down and lectured them to be quiet. Mariah composed herself and stared back into the audience. "When you're loud screaming to kill babies as my right drowns out what should be the loud protest against the killing of women in the Middle East, then you have a serious problem with your priorities. Mariah paused to let the statement sink into the minds of the women seated in front of her. You can scream and shout for your rights, and I'm for women's rights. Make no mistake about it. But where is your screaming and shouting for these women who are imprisoned, executed, are scarred by life by violent acid attacks? Where are your voices for them? Mariah paused once again, wiping the sweat from off of her forehead. Your voices are silent. A few women in the audience hung their heads in shame, while others angrily whispered something in the ears of the women sitting next to them. I have a close Facebook friend living in fear in Saudi Arabia. Her name is Amna. She is a beautiful 21-year-old lady with great dreams and potentials, but right now she is in hiding from her family and the government. Amna lives in an Islamic society that treats women as second-class citizens. A woman in Saudi Arabia is under the lifelong control of a man. The male guardianship law in Saudi Arabia controls a woman's life from birth to death. They cannot make any decisions without a male's approval. They can't travel alone, leave the house alone, apply for jobs, or even go to the emergency room first without consulting their male guardians. Mariah paused, taking a deep breath, trying to compose herself. Amna spent her childhood suffering physical and psychological abuse from her father. At the age of 19, she was forced to marry her cousin. When she could no longer endure his abuse, she ran away from home in the night. Running away from home in Saudi Arabia is against the law. What Amna did is considered a serious threat of dishonoring her family. They will kill her. If she is caught, her father will send her to women's prison, and she will never see the light of day again unless he chooses to release her. Mariah took a quick sip of water and once again riveted her attention toward the audience. Amna, Rahane, and all of the pictures of these women I've shown you, these women are the true feminists. There was an immediate chorus of boos in response to Mariah's blistering condemnation. I am so tired of fake feminists whining, complaining about their so-called rights being trampled on by men. Get a life, ladies. You're not walking around with faces scarred by acid attacks. You're not sitting in solitary confinement waiting to be hanged. You're not hiding in some rat-infested house running away from a dictatorship government. You have your $20-an-hour job, your SUVs, and latest fashions from Macy's. I don't want to hear your outrage or whining or complaining when you live in the freest country in the world. A group of women stood up loudly applauding amidst a few other women shouting and screaming protest toward Mariah. After a few heated moments, the audience quieted down once again. The next time you decide to protest and scream and shout about your so-called violated rights, I want you to remember the pictures of Amna, of Rahane, of the acid attack victims. Today, I honor these brave and courageous women as examples of those who have spoken out and suffered unimaginable, horrific court consequences for their beliefs. These women live in countries where there are no women's rights, and yet they refuse to be silent. The next time you lift up your signs and raise your voices, remember them. These women get my vote for being the true feminists. They should get your vote also. Thank you. Well, I think you get the point. That's a brief selection from my newest book, Dancing with the Fireflies, The Flight Around the World. I promise you, it will change you. It's much more than Mariah taking on the cause of Amelia Earhart and flying around the world, which Amelia failed to do because she disappeared over the Pacific. This is much more than that, but it is also that. It's an adventure, it's a drama, but it, in its very core, this book is sounding the alarm against fake feminists and is showing the world through the voice of Mariah the need for us to stand up and be a voice for the voiceless. And so I appreciate you listening to that special preview. Right now, before my Bible teaching today, I want you to hear the talents of a young woman, since we're talking about Women's Day. This is Lauren Daigle, a song called In Christ Alone.
my hope is found. He is my light, my strength, my song. This cornerstone, this solid ground, firm through the fiercest drought and storm. What heights of love, what depths of peace, when fears are filled, when striving cease. My comforter, my all in all, here in the love of Christ I stand. Oh, oh, there in the ground, his body lay, light of the world by darkness slain, then bursting forth in glorious day. Oh, up from the grave he rose.
Rendition of a classic song in conservative Christian circles, In Christ Alone. That is The Talents, the Voice, and the Worship of Lauren Daigle. Again, today we're talking about the suffering women in the Middle East, but I also want to recognize the great talents of women. There are so many I could recognize, and this is one artist that I want to recognize today in her great vocal abilities that she's using for the glory of Christ. As I've been talking about this issue today, I'm recognizing that many times our minds, our hearts are just overwhelmed with the grief, the sadness, the outrage of how women are treated in the Middle East. The only way we can get a handle on this is to offer these women an alternative to their suffering. Offer them hope in a real way that can change and bring reformation and healing to their situation. And that's why I want to talk about the issue of how Jesus treated women. Because many times in the Middle East, many Muslim women leave Islam when they are reading the Gospels and discover how Jesus treated women. It makes such an impression on them that they are willing to risk their lives and leave the violent and oppressive religion of Islam because they see in Jesus a kindness and compassion and respect that their heart has been longing for. And what I want to do today is to put on display exactly how Jesus treated women. And there are many ways I could show that. I've talked about how Jesus rescued the woman caught in adultery and saved her from stoning. Today I want to talk about another example, how Jesus treated women. In John chapter 4, we have a record of Jesus and the Samaritan woman. And what I want to do is just read the text to you and then I'm going to come back and comment and interpret what's going on. Jesus knew that the Pharisees had heard that he was baptizing and making more disciples than John, although Jesus himself didn't baptize them, his disciples did. So he left Judea and returned to Galilee. He had to go through Samaria on the way. Eventually, he came to the Samaritan village of Sychar, near the field that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired from the long walk, sat wearily beside the well about noontime. Soon a Samaritan woman came to drink water and to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Please give me a drink." He was alone at the time because his disciples had gone into the village to buy some food. The woman was surprised, for Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. She said to Jesus, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink?" Jesus replied, "If you only knew the gift God has for you, and who you are speaking to, you would ask me, and I would give you living water." "But sir, you don't have a rope or a bucket," she said, "and this well is very deep. Where would you get this living water? And besides, do you think you're greater than our ancestor Jacob, who gave us this well? How can you offer better water than he and his sons and his animals enjoyed?" Jesus replied, "Anyone who drinks this water will soon become thirsty again. But those who drink the water I give will never be thirsty again. It becomes a fresh, bubbling spring within them, giving them eternal life." "Please, sir," the woman said, "give me this water. Then I'll never be thirsty again, and I won't have to come here to get water." "Go and get your husband," Jesus told her. "I don't have a husband," the woman replied. Jesus said, "You're right. You don't have a husband, for you have had five husbands, and you aren't even married to the man you're living with now. You certainly spoke the truth." "Sir," the woman said, "you must be a prophet. So tell me, why is it that you Jews insist that Jerusalem is the only place of worship, while we Samaritans claim it is here at Mount Gerizim where our ancestors worship?" Jesus replied, "Believe me, dear woman, the time is coming when it will no longer matter whether you worship the Father on this mountain or in Jerusalem. You Samaritans know very little about the one you worship, while we Jews know all about him, for salvation comes through the Jews. But the time is coming, indeed it's here now, when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. The Father is looking for those who will worship him that way, for God is spirit. So those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." The woman said, "I know the Messiah is coming, the one who is called Christ. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." And then Jesus told her, "I am that Messiah." Just then, his disciples came back. They were shocked to find him talking to a woman, but none of them had the nerve to ask, "What do you want with her?" or "Why are you talking with her?" The woman left her water jar beside the well and ran back to the village, telling everyone, "Come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah?" So the people came streaming from the village to see him. There is so much going on here. I want you to know how Jesus cross-posed the racial discriminatory barriers of his day. I want to talk a little bit about the Samaritans, who they were. The most common view as to the origin of the Samaritans is that they were a mixed race who developed as a result of intermarrying between earlier Hebrews of the northern kingdom of Israel and the Assyrian settlers in Israel following the captivity of the northern kingdom in 722. Other pagans eventually infiltrated the land and mingled with them. Now, this term is found in the Old Testament in 2 Kings 17:29 about the Samaritans. Their group had their own brand of religion, a mixture of Jehovah worship and heathenism. Josiah, the good king of Judah, had sought to remedy their wickedness in his day. So there's much animosity between Jews and Samaritans. When the Jews were rebuilding Jerusalem, the Samaritan offered their services. They were not welcomed, and the Samaritans responded by building their own place of worship. And Elderheim, one of the Old Testament scholars, quoted a Jew by saying, "May I never set eyes on a Samaritan." So several centuries before Christ came, the Samaritans had built their own temple on Mount Gerizim to rival the one in Jerusalem. They offered sacrifices according to the Mosaic code. Now, the Samaritan temple was renamed after Zeus, and the temple was destroyed in about 128 BC. It only had been in existence for 200 years. So during the first century, the religion of the Samaritans was similar to the Jews, except they were more liberal, more kindred, more, you know, like the Sadducees. For example, they weren't like the Pharisees. They accepted the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, observed certain Jewish feasts, and longed for the coming Messiah. Religiously, though, by the Jewish population, they were considered as foreigners. And so this is the setting. This rift between the Jewish community and the Samaritans. Now, with that in mind, you understand why Jesus went to Samaria. He was doing what no Jew would ever do. That's why his disciples were just amazed that he did this. Jesus crossed over the racial barrier. He had a mission. He had an encounter in mind. Now, at that time, what was the view of women? Well, considering the animosity between Jews and Samaritans, the Jewish attitude toward women was less than ideal at that time. Now, you see in the Old Testament, it affords great dignity to womanhood. But over the years, the Hebrews had picked up the thought of paganism. And in that time period, this was the attitude of the Jewish population. Many a Jewish man started the day with a prayer to God, expressing thanks that he was neither a Gentile, a slave, or a woman. A Hebrew man would never talk with women in the street, not even with his mother, sister, or daughter. Now, according to the most liberal view, Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 1, a Hebrew husband could divorce his wife if she was found even talking with another man. Now, one of the great New Testament scholars, William Barclay, tells about a Pharisee known as the bleeding and bruised Pharisee. When they saw a woman approaching, they would close their eyes, and they would constantly be running into things because they closed their eyes. And yet the master addressed this woman. Jesus said, "Give me to drink." What is happening here is we see the Son of God in one fell swoop. He broke through two barriers in this chapter, the one steeped in racial bigotry and the other a hurtful sexist disposition. Jesus came to this Samaritan woman deliberately, and I want to talk about that with you today. In the culture of Islam, according to the Quran, a husband can beat his wife if he even suspects that she has been unfaithful. The Quran talks about a woman having her testimony is only worth half that of a man's. She only gets half the inheritance. A man can marry up to four women. A woman can only marry another Muslim man. Her husband can have four wives, and she can have just one marriage to one man. The view among the Quranic verses is that a woman is a sexual possession, a property of the man. And the man is the chief breadwinner and he is superior to the woman in every facet. A woman is the slave of a man, a sexual slave, that is. The Quran talks about pilfering or plundering her like a tilth in a field. And so we see the Quranic view of women, although Muslims would argue that it shows equality, it's far from that. We see how a woman in the Middle East Islamic society is treated. I've talked about that all morning. I don't need to belabor the point. The point is, here in John chapter 4, we see Jesus, the Son of God, deliberately crossing racial barriers in Samaria and talking to a woman in public. But he does more than talk to her. Jesus ministers to her. He comes to a woman who is considered immoral by her society because of her number of marriages and now living with a man. That is why she came alone at noontime. She could escape the haughty eyes, the judgmental looks, the stares, the ridicule. She came alone. And Jesus met her exactly where she was at spiritually. Jesus didn't come to condemn and rebuke her. Jesus came to offer his love, his compassion, and his respect to her. There is that subtle little jab where he reminds her she has many husbands. And notice he says that to her before she takes the drink of living water. And so Jesus is saying to this woman of immorality, I understand your situation. And I understand that it's wrong what you've done, but I have come to bring healing. And I have come to bring hope. I have come to bring salvation to you. You would never have expected when you came to this well that you were going to have something more than a physical refreshment. You are going to have a spiritual touch from heaven. I am going to pour out onto your life spiritual healing. I am going to pour out on your life, Samaritan woman, the rivers of God's healing grace. I know your situation. I know your life. I've seen your hurts, your pains. I know your sin, but I have come not to condemn. But I have come to bring healing to you, Samaritan woman. And so he came at a time in this woman's life when the greatest of sorrows and the greatest of humiliation was at her doorstep daily. So much so that she had to come alone to avoid the scourge of the women around her. And I love how Jesus treated her. He talked with her about worship. They had a nice discussion about the different views between the Samaritans and the Jews. He talked about who God is. He's a spirit. And then he talked about the fact that I am the Messiah that you've been waiting for. This woman had no idea when she came to the well that the Messiah would be there, not to condemn, but to lift her up out of the shackles and chains of sin and offer living water to heal her soul, to cleanse her of all of her impurities, and to give this woman respect and dignity that had been scourged by a lifestyle of sin. You see, when this Samaritan woman encountered Jesus, she found that living water that would cleanse her of all of her sin and impurity. And she was so excited that she ran to tell everyone in the village. She was once afraid to show her face, but now she's unafraid. She's bold. She's courageous. She's tasted the living water. And it's done more than just quench her thirst. It has healed her from the inside out. It has cleansed her of all of her guilt and shame. She is a new woman. Her past has been buried. Her sins have been forgiven. She has found the Messiah. And this is the hope that many Muslim women have found when they meet Jesus. They have found in Jesus, like this woman at the well, hope healing, forgiveness, a new beginning. And so as we begin to think about the coming Persian New Year in just about 10 to 12 days, I want to offer to my Iranian friends a new beginning. That's what the New Year is, a new beginning. And I want to offer to my friends in Saudi Arabia that new beginning, that hope and healing and salvation that you can find in Jesus. If you've spent a lifestyle of being oppressed and beaten and scarred by men, there is a man. He's the Son of Man. He's the Son of God. He's so much different than any other man that you ever could conceive of. He is a man of compassion, of goodness, of healing. And his name is Jesus. He is the Messiah. He is the hope and healing for the Islamic world. It's no wonder that Muslims are having visions and dreams of Jesus, of a man in a white robe appearing to them and calling them to follow him. It's because Jesus is reaching out to you like he reached out to the Samaritan woman, and he is saying, come to me. I will give you living water. And your life will never be the same. I will cleanse you of all the filth and the grime. I will heal your scars. I will give you hope. I will give you a new beginning. This is what Jesus does. This is what the Son of God does. He comes to you like the Samaritan woman. He understands your scars, your pain. He comes to give you life, to give you hope, to give you a new beginning. Come to Jesus. Cry out to Jesus. Cry out to Messiah. Cry out to Isa. And I promise you, he will pour his living water into your heart and soul, and you will never be the same again. God bless you on International Women's Day. I will see you very soon again on the next Cross in the Desert.
In Christ alone, my hope is found. He is my light, my strength.